We got five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The May 11, 2017 House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness is now in session. We want to start with something that is both topical and a way to center us. We do this every week. So I ask for your attention just for a few moments, if I could, please. On Thursday, May 4, 2017, Navy SEAL Kyle Milliken, a 38-year-old senior chief petty officer, died, and two other U.S. military members were injured during a joint operation with the Somali Army forces against al-Shabaab, an al-Qaeda-linked group. Milliken enlisted in the United States Navy in 2002. The combined Joint Task Force Horn of Africa commander, Brigadier General David Furness, indicated that American and Somalis were traveling as a single group when they came under fire from the militants, and Milliken was hit. No Somali forces were injured. He indicated U.S. personnel were on an advise, assist, and accompany mission and did not think U.S. forces were targeted specifically since the mission was at night. The raid did result in the death of an al-Shabaab local leader. The attack comes as U.S. regular forces are returning to Somalia for the first time since 1993, when 18 special forces died fighting extremists in Mogadishu, a battle dramatized in the film Black Hawk Down. U.S. Army Command recently stated that the U.S. is supporting Somalia and its regional partners to systematically dismantle this al-Qaeda affiliate and help them to achieve stability and security throughout the region as part of the global counterterrorism effort. Navy SEAL Milliken's family indicated he was a devoted father and son, a true professional, and a wonderful husband. Each week, we try to emphasize the memory of a fallen soldier, sailor, airman, marine, or Coast Guardman. This particular issue is close to home because in 1993, I actually was at Eglin Air Force Base when the folks were coming back from the Battle of Mogadishu. There was a major hospital there, and United States military was trying to do good there and eventually had to pull out because of changing nature of a country without any real order. We're here because veterans of all wars, in many cases, still carry the weight of that service. And while our young men and maybe not so young men and women are still fighting wars across the sea, our job is to take care of their families, take care of them. So that's why we're here. So, thank you. What we're going to do today, we're going to have a public hearing and a possible work session on three bills, and then we're going to go to an informational hearing, and then we're going to talk about a few other things coming up. So to make sure that folks that came out of town have a chance to get back before the weather gets weirder, we're going to make sure and do the bills first. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 476 Alpha. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 476A directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to recommend whether the Legislative Assembly should add disabled veterans to the definition of preferred worker so that employers may receive the same benefits for hiring them as are available for hiring permanently disabled injured workers through the Reemployment Assistance Program. It requires recommendation by February 1st, 2018. Sunsets December 31st, 2018. Takes effect 91st day after signed deed. The Department of Consumer and Business Services administers return to work programs in Oregon, including the Reemployment Assistance Program. The Reemployment Assistance Program includes two major programs and several smaller programs. First, the Employer at Injury Program and the Preferred Worker Program. The Preferred Worker Program provides financial incentives to employers that hire preferred workers to workers that are permanently disabled due to compensable on-the-job injury or occupational disease, who are unable to return to regular work. If an injured worker is hired as a preferred worker and has a new injury during the first 3 years of reemployment, the Reemployment Assistance Program pays for the claim, including the administrative costs. In addition, the Preferred Worker Program provides wage subsidies, directs employment purchases, and pays for worksite modifications. Senate Bill 476A requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to advise the Legislative Assembly by February 1st, 2018, whether to add disabled veterans to the definition of preferred worker for purposes of reemployment assistance programs so that employers would receive the same benefits for hiring them as they would receive for hiring a permanently disabled injured worker. This has a minimal fiscal impact. The revenue is no revenue impact. And the vote in the Senate, it was 30 ayes.
Okay, on the list we have one and only one name, Mr. Smith. Come on down.
Good afternoon, Chair Evans, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think my first comment, this is similar to several bills that we've had coming over from the Senate side, asking, or as bills to ask the advisory committee to fulfill its advisory committee role on issues of veterans affairs. We are happy to have them review such items, and in the future, don't necessarily think we need bills, but simply the ongoing communication across both the of the two policy committees and other legislative leadership. The original bill for Senate Bill 476 simply added disabled veterans to the preferred worker program, and has been a previous concept in years past. Likely is a rabbit hole of an analysis in terms of currently it is Oregon employers feeding into that workers' comp system that helps fund that effort. Given that the Department of Defense, military, National Guard, reserves do not contribute into that fund, could be a significant cost to establish a separate, a similar program, but specifically for disabled veterans. So I think mostly our comments are simply on the process, not needing legislation in the future to ask the advisory committee to review.
So, Director Smith, what I'm hearing is that Mr. Savage wants us to move the bill as it originally was, and he will absorb all the costs. Is that what I...
So our colleague, Mr. Savage,
he's laughing hysterically.
DCBS,
that wasn't
has
meant as a
that
joke.
Expertise on this program and has, we think, correctly identified that significant cost to the fiscal analysis on the original intent. And I'm not sure that the advice of our advisory committee would change that significant cost for the consideration going forward.
But you might come up with perhaps funding methodologies if it was seen as something that we wanted to do. Yep. Okay, so unlike the one that was about PTDSI, because this does actually involve at least one other agency, we're going to think about this. We're not going to move it today, but we may actually look at moving this one just so that there's a marker out that is something we need to pay attention to, understanding that we don't need a bill to ask the advisory committee to do things.
Okay.
But we'll check back on that.
Thank you.
Does anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill 476A? Going once, going twice. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 476A. Appreciate the comment and look forward to that conversation. Now we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 993, designating August 7th of each year as Oregon Purple Heart Recognition Day.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 993. Designates every August 7th the Oregon Purple Heart Recognition Day. The Purple Heart is a particular honor bestowed on members of every branch of the armed services wounded or killed in combat going back to 1917, as well as affiliated civilians between 1942 and 1997. More than 21,000 Oregonians are estimated to be eligible. Many Oregon cities have officially designated themselves Purple Heart cities through the actions of their local governments. And in 2015, the state likewise became a Purple Heart state through legislative action. Senate Bill 993 takes a further step, designating every August 7th Oregon Purple Heart Recognition Day. There was no fiscal impact. There was no revenue impact. The vote in the Senate was 30 ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Volk. We have a list of four. Why don't we do this in sets of twos? Elaine Woods and John Woods, would you please come forward? State your name, where you're from for the record and tell us what you'd like to share, and then we'll move to Mr. Poole and Ty, I think.
Oh,
go ahead, ma'am.
Didn't I put his last name down?
Well, you did. I'm just not sure I can read it, and I don't want to say it badly. So,
okay.
But go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Evans and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I'm Elaine Woods, and I live in Beaverton. I'm here to strongly support Bill 993 today, designating August 7th as Purple Heart Day for our military wounded. Many Oregonians have served and bear scars on their bodies and from their wounds. I remember when my husband returned home from serving in the Navy during the Vietnam War, that our brave men and women then were greeted with scorn and rejection and had terrible lies shouted at them. I'm so glad that this is not the case today, and that we can honor and recognize those who served in the military and were willing to pay such a high price because they love this nation and what it stands for. I appreciate this bill especially because it was written and submitted in honor of my good friend, Sandy Radu. She was so very proud of our military, especially her husband, Ty, whom she called her hero for his bravery in combat. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I encourage you to vote yes on this bill.
Sure. Chairman Evans, I'm John Woods. I'm Elaine's husband. I'm here as a Vietnam era vet. I was in the Navy. We were supporting the troops. I had the honor of working on the USS Missouri battleship when it was over there. And one of the things I did was a destroyer tender, which meant that we were doing all the repairs for all the destroyers that were engaged. So many of my friends came home, and they were either wounded or they were missing limbs or whatever. But so many of the people I know who came home, basically when they were watching television, they would be in their bunker. And I remember them telling me all the time they're in their bunker. They felt safe in their bunker. So what I want to do is I want to stay in that support role to those veterans and say, we need to push this through. We need to honor these guys. So I highly ask you to please support this bill and honor these people.
Mr. Woods, if Vice Chair Esquivel was here, he would first of all say, go Navy, and he would also say, welcome home.
Thank you.
I'd like to add to that, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Any questions for the Wood family? Yes, ma'am?
It's not a question. It is a comment. I appreciate you being here on Sandy's behalf. She was absolutely tireless in her care and love for our veterans and their families. And when we were out gathering signatures for Measure 96, she was out there doing that with us. And, you know, and I'm just as someone who was a tireless advocate for good government and making sure that we are taking care of the people we're supposed to be taking care of, there really wasn't anybody better. And it was sad to see her pass so quickly. So thank you for being here in her name today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. All right, Mr. Poole and Ty, please come forward.
Ty Radu.
Radu. Radu. And Sky, can you help?
We should just take that away.
Thank you. Thanks, Guy. All right. Yes, sir, and yes, sir. Whoever would like to go first?
Go ahead.
I knew if I offered him as a vet, he would humbly defer back to me. Thank you, Ty. I don't know where to begin, and I've done a lot of public testimony before. I was here recently when Sherry Springer's bill came through to honor the atomic vets. I can think of no other committee I would rather be on than yours. I know there's some committees I probably wouldn't want to be on.
We share that with you.
Yeah. I was really impacted by the Vietnam War. You can imagine being a little kid. There you are in grade school, and people in the neighborhood are being killed, and all hell broke loose. And boy, I learned a lot from it. And one thing I learned is to appreciate other people's place and be grateful for what the, you know what I'm going to say, matters. Be grateful for what you have. And thank God I wasn't over there, because I don't know how I could have come back. And the person you see here probably wouldn't be able to walk up and speak about it the way I can, because I didn't get blasted with Agent Orange like Ty did. It's almost like I don't need to say anything except make a strong DUPAS recommendation for this. And I want to thank all the vets here, and that includes the people behind me. And Sandy, Ty's wife, was a force of nature. I've been known to be one of those, but I could barely stay with her. And I spent the last day of her life with her, and the next day she was gone. And you know where I spent the last day of Sandy's life? In Salem. Where else? She was a great advocate, and without her, Ty would not be here. I cannot believe Ty would be here. So please move this forward, and thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'll try. Chair Evans and members of the committee, I'm Tyler Radu. I'm here concerning SB 993, designating August 7th of each year as Oregon Purple Heart Recognition Day. As a member of B Company, 2nd of the 8th Mechanized Infantry, 4th Division, Republic of Vietnam, in 1968-69, I received multiple Purple Heart Awards for my combat service. I'm a member of the Military Order of Purple Heart, Disabled American Veterans, Northwest Indian Veterans Association, and the American Legion. The Purple Heart is an award that you cannot be given. It can only be earned by receiving wounds caused by enemy action. It was my wife, Sandy Radu's, heartfelt wish that this day of recognition be granted and enacted by the people of the state of Oregon for Purple Heart recipients and their families. These families of our wounded warriors have borne these veterans' wounds also. I am very delighted to be able to be here myself today and not have just emailed in my testimony. I thank you all very much for your service to the state of Oregon, and I really hope that you do what's right in passing this.
Thank you, sir.
So, can't say more.
And thank you for your family's service after your service.
Excuse me?
I said thank you, and thank you for your family's service after your service. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ty.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being here. I know this isn't all about Sandy. You know, it's, we're remembering her and honoring her as well through this bill, but I just, you know, I think you know how much Sandy meant to me personally. Just chastising me, it seems like a couple of weeks ago, in a good way, chastising me for good things and helping me and encouraging me, and she's always been, and you have as well. And so this small token of passing on this is, in my heart, is for you and for Sandy, but also, of course, for all the veterans. But I just want to thank you for coming today. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your continued service, how you serve the state of Oregon. And I just wanted you to know I really appreciate you.
Hey, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I've got one question. August 7th. Why August 7th?
That is a national day that has already been invoked. It just is not an Oregon day.
Okay.
And my wish is that Oregon would make it just as beneficial.
Well, we'll see in a few minutes if we can't do that. I said, we'll see if we can't do that. Okay? Any other questions? All right. Anybody else want to come forward and speak to Senate Bill 993? Going once, going twice. The public hearing is closed for Senate Bill 993. I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 993. And
I'd be glad to.
Yes, sir. That'd be great. Thank you.
Chairman Evans, I move that Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to recognize that thank you, sir, for your service. And I didn't get a chance to meet Sandy, but my nephew is a Purple Heart recipient. He served two tours in the Army in Iraq, and his Humvee was hit by an IED, and he survived. But I appreciate this, and I think it'll be nice to be able to recognize him and the rest of our veterans that did serve and weren't awarded that, but earned those Purple Hearts through truly sacrificing for our country. So thank you, sir, for your sacrifice. My dad served in Vietnam, too, and he received a Bronze Star, but not a Purple Heart, thank goodness, but the scars were there for him nevertheless. But so thank you very much, and thank you, Chair. I'll be voting yes.
Okay. All right, any other discussion before we move to the vote? Sky, would you please call the roll?
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Excused.
Chair Evans.
Yes. Motion passes, and I will ask Representative Lively to carry this.
Thank you. I'd be glad to.
And I want to apologize. For a moment, I was about to say Representative Esquivel when you made the motion, and I knew that the Army would not exactly appreciate the Navy. So
that's right. But thank you for that recognition, catching that.
I wanted to catch myself before I made that mistake. All right. We're going to now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 80. Mr. Volt.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. We last heard the bill on May 4th, and just as a quick summary, this measure recognizes the service of Native American veterans, requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to assist with programs overseen by tribes and U.S. government accreditation of tribal veterans representatives. Within Oregon borders, there are more than 100,000 members of the 9 federated recognized tribes, and approximately 3,800 tribal members are veterans. The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Indian Reservation, the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla, the Burns Paiute Tribe, the Confederated Tribes of Siletz, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians, the Confederated Coos, Lower Umpqua and Sisula Tribes, the Klamath Tribe, and the Coquille Tribe. Senate Bill 80 recognizes the unique service of Native American veterans and directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to assist with your accreditation of tribal veterans representatives. There was an amendment that we had recognized last time that didn't have, and this amendment directs the ODVA, prior to providing aid and assistance, to consult with the appropriate officials and members of tribes as to the needs of Native American veterans within the tribe. Again, just as a quick refresher, the fiscal was deemed to be indeterminate. The revenue was, there was no revenue, and the Senate vote was 29 ayes, 1 excused.
So I'm going to invite up Mr. Cameron Smith and Mr. Justin Martin. And the reason I'm doing this is I want to clarify the amendment was talked about last week, but we didn't have it through the process of being vetted. Not everybody had seen it, read it, et cetera. I want to make sure everybody's on the same page moving forward. So we'll start with Mr. Smith, and then after Director Smith, I just want to make sure that Mr. Martin is satisfied with the amendment and that the tribes are still in support.
Go first. Go for it.
Right. Or we can do it that way, too. That's fine.
whatever the chair wishes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. We are here in support of the Dash 1 amendments. Unfortunately, our chairman could not be back this week. There is a cultural tribal meal tonight in the Portland area. But his point with the Dash 1 amendments were, we've done so much work at the state level creating this wonderful government-to-government relationship between tribes and state agencies, that he would like to see within this bill that reciprocal education piece continue. We want to make sure that the representatives that are coming out have that knowledge, understand the culture, and understand some things that may be different when dealing in Indian country and dealing with tribal families. So it was very important to the chairman, who is a Vietnam veteran, to make sure that we do have that understanding going in. We didn't want to mandate anything, but we wanted to make sure that folks got out early, did a little bit of homework, did a little bit of work getting up to speed on some of the cultural aspects of what's going on in Indian country, because ultimately that'll help them deliver the service better, and ultimately will allow us to give them some insight into Indian country as well. So that's the Dash 1, and we are in support.
So just want to confirm that the Dash 1 was written with the language that you're comfortable with.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Martin before we move to Mr. Smith? Director Smith.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of ODVA, and we also support the Dash 1 amendments. Appreciate Justin's leadership bringing this forward, and the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde Chair, Ren Lino, who also testified previously and is on our advisory committee as well. We've hosted just this week out at Grand Ronde a great tribal veteran representative training, not just for Oregon tribes, but pulled in from across the Pacific Northwest. And this really is a two-way street. We've got a great expertise in the federal VA and benefits that exist out there, but anything that we can get for our employees, staff, and partners to not just understand one tribe, but the unique cultures of each of our 9 federally recognized tribes, we would welcome. And happy to take any questions.
All right. Seeing no questions before you leave, I just want to say I'm excited because I think this proves once again governments working together, doing the right thing, doesn't have to cost a mint to do it. And I appreciate both the tribes' willingness to step up and provide the training and the assistance and the flexibility.
I did not mention, Mr. Chair, the amended fiscal to recapture some revenue for this great effort.
Uh-huh. Okay. Duly noted. We're going to close public hearing now. Thank you. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 80. And first, we need to deal with an amendment, I suspect.
Yes, Chairman. We have a Chairman Evans, I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 80, dated April 2017. Okay.
Representative Lively, not Representative Esquivel, moves to adopt the Senate Bill 80-1 amendments dated April 27, 2017. Is there any discussion? All right. Seeing no discussion, why don't we, Sky, call the roll for the amendment, and then we'll move to the actual motion.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Excused.
Chair Evans.
Okay. Evans votes yes. Amendment passes.
You're going to hit the gavel? I just read you a script. I'm just trying to keep up. Chair Evans, I move Senate Bill 80 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves Senate Bill 80 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Sky, please call the roll.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Excused.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Motion passes. And how about Representative Lewis? Would you be willing to carry the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're going to be at ease for about 2 minutes. back from being at ease. We're going to be opening up an informational hearing. We're going to open up the informational hearing. We're going to invite Shannon Langley, Coordinator, State Veterans Program, Oregon Department of Employment, to come forward and bring anybody or anything you think you need to walk us through your very detailed good report. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can use both, whatever you want.
So, Chairman Evans, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me back to testify before you. My name is Shannon Langley. I'm a State Veterans Program Coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department. Mm-hmm. So, as you may recall, the Employment Department provided information on veteran services throughout Oregon and supportive services to this committee.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Can you speak up just a little bit more? Some of us have not so good hearing.
Okay. So let me adjust this a little bit here.
There you go.
So is this a little bit better?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So as you may recall, on March 23rd of 2017, I provided information to the members of the committee on veteran services. During that informational session, Chairman Evans did request that the department assess how additional revenues at two specific funding levels could be used to support outreach and direct service programs for veterans. The following information is in response to Chairman Evans' request for additional information. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we came up with quite a few ways in which we could use additional proposed funding to provide veteran services throughout the state of Oregon. One of the proposed ways that we thought we could use this additional funding was for more veterans representative staff. So some of the main functions of these veterans representative staff would be to provide one-on-one intensive employment services to veterans with disabilities and barriers to employment. Another main function of additional veterans representative staff would be to foster relationships with employers and to promote veterans to employers. Also, to strengthen our relationships with the National Guard and Reserve units throughout the state, because we have a huge National Guard and Reserve presence, and to help facilitate veterans networking events in rural communities and to provide supportive employment services to rural veterans and homeless veterans. So I did mention two proposed amounts. So over the biennium, if we were to receive $800,000 in additional funding, we could possibly use that funding for four additional veterans representatives over the biennium. And these veterans representatives would be located in Pendleton to provide veteran services in Pendleton, Hermiston, so in those areas, as well as Hood River and the Dalles. Another veterans representative position could be located in Canyon City to provide veteran services in Grant, Malheur, and Harney counties. A third veterans representative could be located in Coos Bay to provide services in Coos and Curry counties. And then a fourth veterans representative would be located in Beaverton to provide veteran services throughout Washington County. This additional funding could also help support networking events, workshops, and guest speakers targeted towards providing employment services to veterans in rural communities and to provide supportive employment services to veterans in rural communities.
So, if you could, could you tell us why you picked those communities?
Well, I took a lot of different factors into consideration.
We think they're good choices. I just want the public to hear why you were thinking about that.
Sure. One of the things that we took into account was where our current veteran representatives are. So currently, the Oregon Employment Department's Veterans Program is funded through the Department of Labor Vets grant. And this grant provides all the funding for all of our DVOPs and leavers throughout the state. But it doesn't provide enough funding for adequate coverage throughout the state. And these are areas that don't have adequate veteran representative coverage. So that's one of the things that we took into account. Another thing that we took into account was the unemployment rate in rural communities compared to the Portland metro region and compared to the state. So I know some of this information is in that detailed packet that I provided to everybody. But currently, the veterans unemployment rate for the state is 6.3%. But in some of these rural communities, it's as high as 27% or 19%.
What's the state's average?
The state's is 6.3% for veterans. So in some of these,
for non-veterans?
And for non-veterans, it's lower. It's closer to around 4 to 5%. So again, the unemployment rate is already higher for veterans, but it's much higher in these rural communities. So in my mind, when we're looking at statistics like unemployment rates, the amount of veteran representatives we have, and then you take into account the amount of worksource centers and the veterans representatives we have in the rural areas, all of these things taken into account make me think that we need to think outside of the box a bit more when we're addressing rural veterans. So I did mention the WorkSource services that we provide. I do truly believe that WorkSource provides excellent services, and we try our hardest to ensure that we provide quality services, not only to veterans, but to job seekers. However, when you look at WorkSource services in a Portland metro region, we have more WorkSource centers. They have larger staffs. They are closer in location to each other. And they're usually along a MAX route or a bus route, so it's easier for a veteran to utilize those services. Then if you look at some of the WorkSource centers in a rural community, they're further away. There's less transportation options. There's less veterans representatives. And there are less services in general for rural veterans. So those are some of the things that we took into account when we were looking at where we wanted, we could see veterans representatives really maximizing their ability to help veterans in those communities. I did talk about the $800,000 funding level. If we were to receive $400,000, I could see us having a veterans representative still in the Pendleton area to provide services in those counties, and then another one, of course, in the Canyon City area to provide services in those counties. But again, we would also utilize some of the funding for networking events, workshops, and supportive employment services. Another thing that we took into account when we were looking at services for veterans throughout the state was the fact that we don't have a large military post. We have a couple of Coast Guard units and a large National Guard presence, but we don't have a Lewis McChord, we don't have a Fort Bragg, and with those large posts comes services. So there's employment services, educational services, transitional services. That's where our veterans representatives come in. They can fulfill that gap in services. And then when you look on the National Guard side, we have an excellent relationship with the employer support of the Guard and Reserve, which is a nationally funded program. However, their funding has actually been reduced. So their employment coordinators that worked with the National Guard and Reserves, they don't have the resources that they had before. That's where we come in. Additionally, with these veterans representatives, because they're not tied to the parameters of a specific grant, we can be more flexible with who they serve. We can envision them being kind of a hybrid DVOP leaver, so they could really be more flexible in those areas they serve. So to clarify, a DVOP is a Disabled Veterans Outreach Program Specialist, which is a very long title. And they provide those one-on-one services to vets. And then you have your leavers, your local veterans employment representatives, that foster those great relationships with employers. These veterans representatives, if they were able to perform both, they would be much more flexible and useful in these communities. Another thing that we looked at was possibly providing direct services to some of those National Guard and Reservists in those communities, such as Pendleton and the Dalles. Right now, with the parameters of our grant, in order to provide those direct services to a National Guard or Reservist, they actually also have to qualify as a veteran. Well, if we're not held to the parameters of that grant, we can provide those direct services to the National Guard and Reservist as well. So, you know, I've talked quite a bit about the veterans representative role and why we came up with these specific ideas and locations for the veterans representatives. Another thing I would like to talk about are the networking events and why we think that they would be effective. We have had networking events in the past in Portland and in Salem and in Eugene, and they've been highly effective. And of course, we'd have to tailor it for a rural community because it's a bit different than Portland or Eugene. But some of the ideas and things that have worked for these networking events can be transferred over to rural communities. The Veterans Representatives, as part of being the employment event facilitator, would be to foster relationships with employers, to foster relationships with local workforce investment boards, with our Workforce Oregon staff, with our VA partners. So these events are really going to be value added and address the actual concerns of the community. These networking events, when you say networking, a lot of times you think of just people standing around and talking. That's not what I mean. When I talk about veterans networking events, I mean incorporating workshops. We've had workshops in the past where they talked about, you know, how to present yourself, how to network effectively, how to do your elevator pitch. And this really boosts a veteran's confidence. So when they're talking to employers, they're putting their best foot forward. Additionally, we've had employers, and employers love doing this, that are committed to hiring veterans, that go to these events, and they talk to the veteran job seekers about, this is how we want you to apply for work here. This is what we're looking for in the ideal candidate. This is what we're looking for in a resume. This is why you want to work for me. And we've even had on-site interviews at these events. So they're really highly effective, and it's a great way for these rural communities to come together to serve veterans. Some of the locations of the events that we thought may be effective would be Southwest Oregon. So when I say Southwest Oregon, I'm talking about Coos, Curry, and Douglas counties, or Rogue Valley, so Jackson and Josephine counties, or maybe the East Cascades, so the Deschutes, Klamath, and Lake counties, Eastern Oregon, so that includes Harney, Malheur, Umatilla, Union, and Wallowa counties, these areas where we can really, really tailor it to their needs. So I've talked about the veterans representative role. I've talked about the networking events and the need and some of the research that we did to support why we think these may be good ideas. I also want to talk about some of the supportive employment services. So what we did is we conducted a formal assessment of the services needed in those areas. So I talked to the veterans representatives there and said, what are you lacking? What do you need? What do you wish you could have to better serve vets? I talked to Workforce Oregon managers, I talked to our staff, I talked to our partners, and they gave me a pretty comprehensive list. So, of course, especially homeless veterans, they're always going to need personal care items and survival items, such as food boxes and vaccinations and boots and things of that nature. But what I really wanted to focus on was supportive employment services, so services that lead directly to training or lead directly to educational or employment opportunities. So some of the ideas that I gathered from some of our partners and veterans representatives involved certifications, so CNA, EMT, IT certifications, work equipment, that's a big one, medical training certifications, specialized job training workshops, services for incarcerated veterans. So our vet reps also work quite extensively with incarcerated veterans, and what they've been telling me is when they reenter society, the biggest thing they usually need is an ID or a driver's license, and a lot of times they don't have the money to procure that.
So on that note, if I could stop you real quick.
Sure.
I see Mitch in the audience. If Mitch could come forward for just a moment. We have a request in for Ways and Means for additional funds for the one ODVA person and two DOC people for the incarcerated vets package. And I'm assuming that you have already had conversations with Lever DevOps about this plus-up effort, but how have those conversations been going, and if there are additional tools to supplement what you just talked about, please feel free to add that later. I'm not going to put you on the spot to give the list today.
Okay.
But as we're working through that, if there are conversations, especially at the county level, where the parole probation folks, ODVA, and the Lever DVOP all recognize that there's certain tools they need, now would be a great time to add it into the pot if we can identify those. So just a request, and if you have any questions you might want to, or comments you might want to make about it.
For the record, my name is Mitch Sparks. I'm the Director of Veterans Services for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. There is one area of Oregon that we have made that connection, and that's a it's with between us, the Malheur County Veterans Service Officer, and the Snake River. So, okay. And then in that piece is the local employment office, and that's not necessarily that the state Veterans Service Officer doing it, but the Malheur County is doing that, and we want to duplicate that in the major incarcerated population areas. Is that that's an important piece. First, we get them out of the, you know, transitioned out, and then
with the services that they've earned, so they're
Put
back there with as much as they can.
Correct, and then the barriers that prevent employment. Some barriers are because of the crimes they committed.
Right.
Some it is so basic, such as a state ID, is Social Security card. Right. So those are barriers that we're looking at throughout the, those breaking down those barriers in the transition piece. That has to be a partnership between state, county, federal, nonprofit. So
okay.
And to make it work.
Thank you. I again apologize for bringing it up here, but I know that as we've been trying to figure out how to build the system to make sure that folks during release get every advantage possible, it makes sense to tie it completely into what the Lever and DVOP folks are hearing from employers, what they need at the same time. So, but thank you for that.
Yes, sir.
Any questions for Mitch while he's up here? Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks.
So those are just some of the supportive services that additional funding may support. Another thing that we looked at was, how do you measure the success of new ideas, of, you know, these ideas that we've been proposing to you? And before I get into the numbers, one thing I do want to point out is these goals over the biennium, if we were to receive this funding, will be revisited and revised, because that's the proper thing to do to ensure that we're not only meeting the goals, but if we get received more information, to make sure that maybe we should tweak it, or, you know, make sure that it is really reflecting what we're doing. So that being said, a lot of these goals are very self-explanatory. We want to provide veterans employment and supportive services throughout Oregon, more veterans representatives that are fostering relationships with, the county, with all of our partners are going to provide more services to more veterans, and that's always a good thing. We want to partner more effectively with the local National Guard and Reserve units. We want to provide those direct services to the National Guard and Reservists, even if they don't qualify as veterans. We want to lower the average rural veteran unemployment rate, because, like I said before, it is significantly higher than the overall unemployment rate for veterans. We would like to see veterans in rural areas have living wage employment. So when we say living wage, we looked at the definition of living wage, the average wages in those areas, and then we looked at the cost of living. So the average wage is around $14 to $14.90 an hour, which is around $31,000 a year. And that's pretty hard to live off of. We would like to see it maybe bumped up to at least $16 an hour, something that's more manageable, so they have more of a work-life balance. One of the things that I heard quite a bit when I was a veterans representative, and from the veterans representatives themselves, is a lot of veterans, especially in rural communities, if they are employed, they're underemployed. So maybe they have a part-time job, or they got laid off from a job that paid them $20 an hour, and now they're making $10 an hour. Or they're working several part-time jobs just to make ends meet. And it's very hard to have a good work-life balance if you're working three jobs just to make enough to pay your bills. So that's something we'd like to see, is veterans in rural communities making a living wage. We would like to see them having higher employment retention rates. My way of thinking is if you're making a living wage and you're it's long-term employment and you are, you know, you're a veteran and you're an asset to that employer, then it's a win-win situation because that employer is going to say, I have this great veteran employee, I want to hire more vets. And that veteran's going to say, you know what, this employer has treated me really well, I'm going to tell my veteran colleagues about this employer. So it's a win-win situation for employers and veterans. And we also thought about what we'd like to accomplish over the long term. So if, you know, if the funding were to be expanded beyond the biennium, what would we love to see in the long term? Overall, we'd love to see Oregon's veterans finding long-term living wage employment. We'd like to see them receiving higher quality job leads and increased awareness of not only the services that the veterans program provides, but the services that WorkSource Oregon provides for free. We'd also love to see, we'd like to foster longer lasting relationships with employers in rural areas so we really understand their needs as well, and we're providing them with those high quality candidates. And of course, we'd love to continue to provide supportive employment services to rural veterans and homeless veterans as well so we can remove those barriers to employment.
Okay. Very comprehensive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments, questions?
Well, I have a question if I could.
Yes, sir.
So I appreciate your explanation about how you chose the locations and certainly the unemployment rates and those things in rural. Mm-hmm. That makes great sense. I wasn't as clear on Beaverton.
Yes. So Beaverton, of course, is not very rural. However, Beaverton has a huge veterans population.
What I see.
There's over 34,000 veterans that live in the Washington County area alone. And we have a veterans representative there that would really like the help, to be honest.
I assumed it had to be. Thank you.
Yeah, good point. Other questions? Well, thank you very much. The breakdown and the justification for your assumptions will be very helpful as we try to ensure that the Ways and Means folks hear how we would intend to spend it and what we would expect on the other end so that they have a sense of both proportion of investment and likely outcomes. They are very interested in, of course, moving vets to work, but they want to make sure we're doing it in programs that have demonstrated success. And I really appreciate the input. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to close the informational hearing, and we're going to open it up for a brief conversation about work groups. So I want to make sure and kind of go around the room. Senate Bill 143 work group is going to, there's an amendment in, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, Chair. And we should have it back by next Thursday.
By next Thursday. And then the airport safe airport white paper is...
We are in the process. I have another meeting with all our work partners tomorrow afternoon. I should have some close to be a deliverable, at least two of the three by next week.
Thank you, Employment Department. Great job. Okay. And Representative Post, we have been working with the military department to try to get actual Aries people as opposed to some of the administrative folks.
Right.
And Mr. Volk is going to be working with one person, but through your network, please invite others to participate, that maybe even the county level, not necessarily the state, just so we get you what you need for kind of a conversation of the tools and training that they might be open to.
It's just been coordinating to all for the same date.
Right. Yep.
We
understand they're all doing lots of things. Other than that, we are trying to plan a tour. Do not know yet the date, but a tour of the Oregon Emergency Management Emergency Coordination Center and some places like that that are co-located. More on that as we find ourselves hurry up and waiting for floor. We're going to try to take advantage of some of the opportunities that present themselves. And Mr. Volk, if you'd like to tell us what's coming up for the next week, that'd be helpful.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. For Tuesday, we plan on having a speaker for Core First. They have a company out of Portland on seismic detection, and Senate Bill 850A and Senate Joint Memorial 7. For the following Thursday, we're hoping we have at least one judge and the coordinator for the Veterans Court Program. And we have several other bills lined up. We're trying to get the folks from Lane County to see if they can have a vet court representative to sort of compare and contrast the vet court programs. But they're starting up in Oregon. They're not in every county yet, but we'll get a feel for what Marion County does.
So, again, we'll be trying to do a balance of informational hearings as well as work. My promise to you is twofold. Number one, unless we have a bill to work, I probably won't be asking for a committee meeting because I know things are getting tough. That said, if I do have a bill to work, there might be an informational hearing connected just so we maximize the time. All right? Again, if as you're working on your work groups, if there's things that you need from us, please let me know. Agency directors are getting a little more willing to be supportive, especially as the budget gets, as pencils get sharper, they're a little more attentive. ODVA is always attentive. Present company and aviation is always attentive. But some other agencies, let's just say that I've been getting phone calls a lot faster as the budget process has been going on. So if you're not getting what you need, please let me know. Thank you all for your hard work today. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, just a reminder in case the committee hasn't seen it, there's a mobilization ceremony for the 1186 MP company to Salem Armory at 1 o'clock on the 25th.
25th, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Entire committee is invited. I've told Stuckey to expect either us or our staff. We want to make sure that the folks, the mission that they have is certainly going overseas. Not sure how much is public or not, but what I do know is they have a very interesting mission to protect dignitaries in a very important area. So that'll be both interesting as well as probably make a lot of us have sleepless nights making sure that they're safe. Other things that are upcoming, of course, next week, Armed Forces Day, May 14th. Expect the helicopter if the weather is cooperating. Usually they have the band. Usually they have some food. Usually kind of a pretty good day. So want to put that on your calendar as well. Thank you all for the hard work. And have a wonderful rest of your afternoon.
Thank you.
We're now closing the committee meeting.